You're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM, Winnipeg.
This is Olivia, and you're listening to Bikini Drive-In on CKUW 95.9 FM Winnipeg. Bikini Drive-In's mission is to analyze horror and science fiction films through an intersectional feminist lens while combining elements of screen and media studies, arts criticism, and women and gender studies. Since we'll be discussing portrayals of horror and violence, content warning, listener discretion is advised, etc. Also, spoilers ahead. Today I'm joined again by artist and curator Mahalat Kaf. Thanks so much for being here.
Hi!
Mahalat Kaf is an artist from Treaty 1 territory, so-called Winnipeg, Manitoba, that uses mediums such as photography, collaging, and poetry. Through their work, she hopes to create more awareness about the lack of representation of women of color and queer people of color in media. The work has been shown at local galleries and events such as Ace Art Inc. and Black Spaces Nuit Blanche, Nuit Noir. Their work has been shown at the Art Space Window Gallery, Flip Fest, and in the Artist Run Center, T-Base, in Toronto, Ontario. She explores topics of feminism, blackness, and gender through their artistic and activist practice. And Mahalat, you have a couple of big events coming up. Do you want to talk about them?
Yeah, sure. It's even wild to think about it. But so like the first one, well, actually, yeah, two things which I'm really happy about. So I was able to curate a program, like a shorts program to Winnipeg Film Group. It's called They're Funny for a Reason. So it's a mixture of films from filmmakers here in Winnipeg, but across the prairie as well, like focusing on satire. So that'll be the last day to like watch it is today. So you should watch it if you haven't watched it already. It's I think it's super funny, but also I made it, so that's a little bit contradictory. But also titled "The Funny for a Reason."
Sorry. Yeah, it's very funny. It's very funny.
I'm so glad.
Yes. Yeah, I really enjoyed it, and congratulations. That's such a big accomplishment.
Thank you. No, I was super happy to be able to do it because I worked for the film group anyway. And then they're like, do you want to curate this thing? And I was like, yeah. And I finished curating this like 2 months ago because I was like so excited. I was like, I'm going to carry it on time. Then I'm like, yeah. Wait, I still have to wait till March. And March came. I was like, oh my God, it's happening.
It's so great. And then, and that's available through Cinematheque at Home until March 14th.
Yeah. And it's completely free. So watch it. It's free. Mm-hmm. Why not? You know?
Yeah.
And then March 20th, which is the following weekend, I had the opportunity and the privilege and honor of interviewing Big Frida, which is like mind-blowing still, for Synonym's Gorge Festival, which is happening the 20th and 21st.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's through Unite Our Speaker Series, and that'll be available on various Facebook pages.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and that's free too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so exciting. What a big month for you.
Thanks.
Today we will be discussing Anna Lily Amirpour's 2014 film, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
ای دختر
در تاریکی کنده قد
منو نمیدونی
چیزی که میبینی
یه دونه طوفان می اومد. یه دونه طوفان خیلی شدید از پشت اون کوه ها. چیزی عوض می شد؟
Residents of a worn-down Iranian city called Bad City encounter a skateboarding vampire who preys on men who disrespect women. So, Mahalat, was this your first time seeing this movie?
It was, yeah. This is the first time I ever seen it. But I remember a while ago, I feel like maybe it was like end of high school, I think. I wanted to see this film. I was like, oh, this looks so cool. But mm-hmm. I never ended up watching it. And now there's like a perfect opportunity just to watch it, to talk about it with you. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I never had to watch it before, but I'm happy I didn't. It definitely exceeded my expectations of what I interpreted of it too.
Mm-hmm. What was your initial, like, what did you initially think it was all about?
I thought it was just like, I thought it was like a girl who walks home alone at night and then like maybe men try to attack her or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it was actually the opposite, where like it was centered around loneliness too, mm-hmm. which is really interesting. And like this girl vampire, like, which is literally called the girl. Mm-hmm. And I remember like, do I not know? Am I not following the film enough? And I was like, am I not following this film enough? I was like, no, she has literally no name, like just like the girl, and like wears like the exact same outfit every time, which is also really interesting too. Mm-hmm. Like same striped shirt. And then watching it was really interesting because, like, yeah, it's a very, like, dark film. And, like, also, to the fact that, like, it is film in black and white, where it's, like, I feel like some films are meant to be like that. And that mm-hmm. was really beautiful to see. Like, the various shots were so beautiful. Like, even, like, the one of her in the bathtub and, like, her coming out of it. Like, that was, like, oh, so good. I was, like, mm-hmm. wow, I'm hypnotized.
Yeah.
But overall, like, I thought the film was just, like, really interesting because I think it touched on a lot of different things, but also, like, exceeding my expectations of what, like, a vampire movie could be, because there was moments where I was, like, I was a bit scared, like, ooh, a little scared there, but it wasn't, like, jump scare, like, oh, my God, like, I'm, like, it wasn't gory, it wasn't, mm-hmm. like, this typical, like, of what people imagine horror films are, but, like, mm-hmm. I think it was dark and, like, romantic and, like, lonely, and, like, mm-hmm. it made you feel things, but not what you expected to, like, see like a girl get like attacked by a man at night. It's like, oh, she's actually doing the attacking, but like mm-hmm. as a vampire, which is super interesting.
Yeah, totally. I think it's really cool that it's like a mix of genres and eras. Like there's, yes, it's part horror movie, but it's also like a spaghetti western, a film noir, and this like lovely love story at the same mm-hmm. time. So I don't want to talk a little bit about diaspora and sort of the Iranian and American identities that are shown in the film. So Anna Lily Amirpour, the director, was born in England to Iranian parents, grew up in Miami and Bakersfield, California, and now lives in Los Angeles. And I have a quote here from a New York Times interview with Robert Ito. For Ms. Amirpour, who grew up feeling really Iranian at home, but less so about everywhere else, the chance to create her own version of Iran just half hour's drive from her former hometown was welcome. I did go to Iran finally, but that's completely alien to me, she said. It's weird because Sheila Vand, the actress who plays the girl, and I were talking about how with this movie, we kind of made our own place that was as Iranian as we were, which is a mashup of so many things. And I also think it's really interesting that like how it's not an English language film. English language film, everyone speaks Farsi in the film. And I have another quote here. So from an interview with Esther Berger from The New Republic, asks, you shot the movie in Bakersfield in Southern California. Why did you decide to film it in Farsi? And then Amirpour responds, well, it's an Iranian fairy tale. It's an Iranian story with Iranian characters. I don't think it really matters where I shot it. I mean, Middle Earth isn't really New Zealand, and that's where Lord of the Rings is. Sergio Leone made American Westerns in Spain. A film is a place of the mind. So I just see this as my soundstage where I'm putting my play on. I'm modeling it after a lawless, nameless ghost town from like a Sergio Leone film, or Rumblefish, which is also a stylized American town, or Gotham or Sin City. I feel like this is maybe the question I get asked the most, and I don't really know why. Like if I was Polish and I made a Polish story, I wonder if people would be asking me why it was in Polish. America is a country of immigrants, and there are lots of movies about Italians who come here. I mean, in Goodfellas, Scorsese's got Italian speaking Italian in New York. America is like a place where all these ingredients cook together and are truly mixed. I'm in some ways exactly what the movie is, which is a mix of so many things. I mean, it's not a documentary, so I don't understand the question. When people ask me that, I really feel stuck by how many times I get asked that question. When you're watching the film, did you think to yourself that was supposed to be set in Iran, like the real country? There's a vampire in the movie, so I don't think we're in the real world. I don't think we're in Kansas anymore. If there could be a Wizard of Oz, if Marty McFly could go to 1954, I can have an Iranian ghost town in the desert and shoot it in California. Honestly, if people are hung up on where it was shot and what language it's in, I failed. It's a love story and it's about caring about these characters and what happens to them. So kind of a long quote, but I found this quote really interesting, and it kind of made me think about how films are categorized, like especially when it comes to funding and awards. For example, Lee Isaac Chung's new film, Minari, is set in Arkansas, made by American filmmaker and starring American and South Korean actors. But because the characters speak Korean in the film, it was characterized as a foreign language film at the Golden Globes. So this further characterizes American stories and films as only English speaking. I have another quote here about Minari and the whole Golden Globes mess from Vulture. The Globes have determined that Minari, Lee Isaac Chung's semi-autobiographical film about a Korean family, Korean-American family in 1980s Arkansas, features too much Korean dialogue to compete in Best Drama and therefore slotted it in Best Foreign Language Film. Minari takes place entirely in Middle America and is telling the most American of stories, the struggle of immigrants to achieve their dreams without losing touch with the culture of the old country. So yeah, I want to ask you, Mahalat, like, what did you think of Amirpour's quote? And like, she obviously seems very sick of the question as to like, why was your film in Farsi and shot in California and all that?
Yeah, I think it's just interesting, like even with the quote around like the movie Minari, which I didn't know about, which is just like, I think making like the link between the two of them is where this idea, like it almost, when people ask why didn't you make a film in a specific place, it's like almost you're erasing this idea of like first generation kids who, you know, who are born, who are maybe like, for example, like born somewhere else but have Iranian parents, or for myself, like, you know, I was born here but my mom is from Ethiopia, right? So it's like it erases this whole identity of the idea of like reimagining what life would be back, quote unquote, back home, but you reimagining it where you currently live or like where you currently grew up or like the environment that you surround yourself with. So it's super interesting how like people are put into those boxes of like, you have to film this here because it was the stories from like here, when that person could have made it anywhere. Like in my mind, when I watched it, like I assume it was in Iran because I'm just like that's what my assumption was. And even if finding out like that it wasn't, I'm like, okay, that's completely fine. Like you can also change like the environment to look like a specific environment. Like that's what I feel like most movies do. Like for example, like when she brought up the quote around like Lord of the Rings, like that wasn't made like, you know, in the middle of like New Zealand. It's like you make the environment look, match the environment you're trying to like, you know, match essentially. It's a film, because people aren't also realize like filming of the film where it's supposed to be made, it's probably really expensive, and like the time and energy putting into that and being like culture respectful too and like stuff like that, but like being able to focus it back into her like lived experience and bringing it to a place where she's grown up to a certain extent, it's like I think it's super important. And like it's just, it's unfortunate that people ask that question constantly where like, yeah, that isn't the main narrative. The narrative is like, yeah, talking about this love story, with specifically with this film, like the love story between the like the girl and like
Arash.
Yeah, it's like this love story, and it's like this really like her experience as like a vampire and then like the people around her and stuff like that. So why not ask questions around that, and like, or ask questions around like I guess like focusing less on identity politics, like I think that goes into it too, identity politics, where just like you're asking this person who's already like struggling with this idea of like being born somewhere else and or having family from somewhere else and being that identity, and then asking another question on top of it just makes it way more uncomfortable, makes that person like, I don't know, very self-conscious too. And like, you know, it just doesn't make sense. So like even when you read like the quote around like the Golden Globes and like the Minari, or just like it doesn't have to be, it's not a foreign film because it's made in America, and like this is the story of a person who, you know, like either immigrate to America or like, and then has kids. It's like, what it, how are they able to tell stories like about like their parents and to like talk about like, you know, the dialogue they have between their parents, which not is not always English, right? Like like I think it is important to see for people that who have family who are not born like where they actually are, and like, or for example, like using myself as an example, like it would have been nice to see more films like if, for example, if a person was like Ethiopian and then like their mom immigrated, like their first generation, having that like weird relationship, right? Or like, or I'm just going off now, but just it makes me think about erasing like this identity of like first generation kids or second generation kids, where it's just like you have to be able to create your own narrative too, because you don't always get to go back home or always get to go back wherever you're from, because then, because there's complications or whatever. So I think the question they keep asking her about like, why is it not filmed in Iran, is like, I think it's kind of a stupid question. And just like, she's able to make up her own idea of what Iran would look like in like the context of like whatever film she's making. So I think it's a question that doesn't need to be, it's not really necessary anymore, because she answered it so many different times. Like, it's not made there because I couldn't do it.
Because she is like making this her version of Iran, which is like stems from her experience of like being born in England and also being from California and all this stuff. Yeah, it seems like there's a lot of pressure. Like, it's, I'm not sure if it's just like filmmakers of color or what kind of stories, but this idea of like authenticity.
Yeah, it's very weird. Like, it has to be very, I get to a certain extent, like being culturally authentic, because you don't want to make anything that's just not culturally authentic, mm-hmm. and like make it like weird and like flimsy, and then someone's like, that's not even accurate. But it's like, mm-hmm. some people don't even have the opportunity to even make it accurate, because they can't go back home because of like war or situations, mm-hmm. or like homophobia or whatever else. So it's like, if that person has to make up their own narrative to the best that they believe and put a lot of time and energy and like love into it, I think that's important. And to be authentic, sometimes you just ruin the entire story. Mm-hmm. Like, you just make it, you're so trying sort of be perfect, and then it ends up just being something that you're not even like wanting or whatever. So, but I feel like it's also just a really long journey, I think, from like, for a lot of folks of color, and like, especially when you have parents that are not from Canada or whatever, where you're from, it's a very weird relationship to understand, mm-hmm. like, you know, you're not, you're from this place, but you're not though. And you're like, well, I don't know. It's mm-hmm. a weird back and forth of like thinking about your identity and stuff like that. But yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I did like her, the part that she said about like, it's a vamp, there's a vampire in the movie. Like,
yeah, it's like, it doesn't have to be.
That's not authentic. Like, that's not real.
Like, imagine like Twilight, for example, Twilight, one of the biggest
vampire, the greatest movies, movie
of all time.
Of all time, yes.
The amazing cinematic classic Twilight was made in freaking Seattle, or like what, Vancouver? Like, mm-hmm. are vampires like, you know, from Vancouver? I don't know. Probably
they
not.
Also sparkle. Yeah. Yeah.
Also, they sparkle. No one was asking Stephanie Meyer, like, oh, why they, like, you know, they're like, oh my god, they sparkle, it's so amazing, you know. Yeah. And like, that's the huge difference, is like, they ask like this white person, like, oh, of course they sparkle, and he's like really, really like attract, like conventionally attractive, and like, you know, pale is like, I guess vampires are pale, but like, you know, all white people, that's fine. But then ask, you know, another person is like, why is it not filmed here? And you're like, because I don't want to. Like, well, that's bad. And it's like, okay, no one's going after, like, you know, white people for like, you know, making things accurate, because they can do whatever they can, like, yeah, they can play whatever they want, but like, it's just interesting where like that changes automatically when you're not white. Or you have to be, everything has to be authentic, has to be perfect, because if it's not perfect, you're gonna be boxed into something else you don't like. And regardless, you like, whether like you're not, you're gonna be boxed into, like, you know, I was thinking this too earlier, like, you're trying to make a film about something, it doesn't have to be like a black film, it's like, it can be a like romantic film, right? Or she's even saying like, it's a love story, it's like an Iranian love story, but at the end of the day, it's just like a love story between this vampire and this boy. So like, it's weird, so many different things. It's like being boxed in, it's like, this is a film about something else, but you're making it something else. I don't want to be that.
Yeah, but also, yeah, like you said, like this pressure to sort of like represent the Iranian experience, or
yeah, which is just not realistic, because like everyone's so like, not from my experience, because I'm not Iranian, but like, speaking from experience of a black person, like, every black person is very different. But I think that's the connection between like black indigenous folks and like folks of color, where it's like, you have like, everyone's so different, but a lot of times people assume like, well, this is how you made this film is a black film, so it's gonna be really to all black people. It's like, no, it won't. Like, it's gonna, some people are gonna hate it, some people are gonna like it, but just as long as you're trying to represent your personal experience, and if people are able to relate to that, that's great. But like, at the same time too, it's like, not the only experience that that one group of people will have, essentially.
I was thinking about this recently too, like, why do I love movies like about fucked up people? Like, why do I love playing those parts so much? Like, why do I like, some of my favorite movies are like, what's like badass about being a junkie, you know? Or I think for me, I'm just the most interested in seeing a reflection of my darkness and things.
Yeah.
Like, that is, nothing makes me feel more comfortable than, and like, less alone than seeing other people's, you know, like, seeing those sorts of stories and characters and feeling like that it's human.
Yeah.
In a few interviews, the filmmaker describes the film as a mirror, and so viewers can get what they want from the film. And this has come up in questions about like whether or not the film is feminist, like why is it in Farsi and all those types of questions. So this is a quote from the same New Republic interview. And this is a question that the interviewer asks. So in the movie, the girl walks around at night and sometimes attacks violent predatory men. Did you intend it to have feminist themes? And then Anna Lily Amirpour responds, well, did you interpret it as a feminist movie? That probably says more about you than it does about me. A film is like a mirror. What I connect with it in a movie is my own stuff. So consciously, no. That's more about how people on the surface are not what they seem. There's more than meets the eye to people. It's not just about women, it's everybody. Everybody in the world, in the film, in my mind, is much more than what they seem like on the surface. All people underneath have strange, weird secrets inside. And when you get to those things, it makes you reevaluate the outside and reevaluate your assumptions. That's what I'm interested in. It's not an ism. All those things confine your thinking because they tell you, this is what it is, and then it's done. I think everything just has to be considered in its own individual space and time. So yeah, again, like, what did you think of that quote? And as an artist and curator, have people asked you if your work is feminist? And do you think that there's pressure for women to make feminist art?
Oh, I think definitely there's like this weird pressure to make art that fits into like feminist ideals and stuff like that. And I think when I first started making art and stuff like that too, it's like my intention was to make feminist stuff, but now I've strayed away so much from the idea of like any type of like, yeah, isms or like Nesses, even though my bios do say it, because you know it's, you know, whatever. But I think if someone interprets your work as that, then that's like great, and like that falls into a certain category. But I think if you're trying to make the intention of anything, if it's supposed to be like Black art or like feminist art, I think it's not going to come out as you're come across as like really real. Because if you're trying to meet a certain goal, especially with feminist work, it's like feminist work is like so vast and so like, I'm not trying to use the word general, but like there's like, it's so much, there's like so many things that within the word feminist are intersectional, and like you can like take things apart. So like nothing, like you can say something's feminist, but it also could be this and also the thing, it also could be another thing. So I think the fact that she's kind of like going against that narrative of like her, like this film specifically being a feminist film, I think is like really, think about it now, it's just like, that's like really smart, because you don't want to be boxed into anything that's like a feminist film, and people are going to call it a feminist film, or people are going to like talk about it in that way, because the title, I think it's the hard part, where I think the title for me when I first read it, I was like, oh yes, this is a feminist film, because it's a girl who walks home alone, like, yeah, I can't say the whole freaking thing, even though I watched it, but you know, like, it's a film about something that, and like, think about like walking home alone at night, like, you know, walking anywhere in the dark at night, like anything in the dark at night, Mahalo, of course, night, dark, same thing. but yeah, it's like something that a lot of women think about. I think also like non-binary folks too, and just any like marginalized group of people. So I think it's something that comes across as feminist, and then hearing that she doesn't see it as that, I think that's super interesting and like kind of like radical in a way, where it's like, no, it's not this thing I'm gonna like agree to, because like it's for everyone. And it can be for everyone, because like, men, cis men could relate to it to a certain extent with this film, or like, you know, women can, or whatever. It's like, I think that's really interesting that she's able to do that and not subject herself to be like, oh yeah, this is what it is, and you got it right, because like everyone can have the different interpretations of it. But I think it's unfortunate that like people feel pressure to make certain work that is feminist, or like women specifically, because a lot of times like your gender isn't like what only thing you can offer, because you can obviously offer more than that. And I think that's where you have to kind of push yourself, where you're like, oh, okay, like I'm a woman, but then like what else do I have to offer other than just like my, you know, gender, like my identity around that? It's like there has to be something deeper than that. I think it's a good starting point a lot of times, but like if for a person to really get deep into whatever they're making, is a film or like a poem or whatever, has to be more deeper than that, because it just comes across partially for me just corny. like it just sounds bad. I'm like, if your only thing is just being a woman, it's like you gotta step it up, you know. Like you have, you know, that's great, that's like, you know, you're a woman, but it's like, you, if you're only offering that, it's like you have not really dug deep into your identity, or like you have dug deep into other people's identities and how that relates to you being a woman, you know. Because like a lot of times too, it's like this idea of womanhood too is like straight up, it's weird, it's so weird. And then now like understanding people who are also non-binary and stuff like that, where does that come in? And then people who see themselves as femme identified but not women, but kind of gets looped in together. It's like this whole interesting conversation of like, what is even womanhood, and what do we even call it womanhood anymore? It's like, or like, what do we even categorize things like works by women, which is super interesting. It's like, it is important to highlight women, but then like, what about all the other like people? What does that mean? Do you like that's a hard part. It's like you wanna be able to uplift other women around their work, but then when does it become just corny as hell and you're like, well, I'm just like looped into this group of other women because we're all women, but is it because our work is actually good or is it because we're just women? And that's mm-hmm. I think, oh, that makes me a good point. I'm like, oh, that's an interesting point. I'm gonna sound so self-absorbed in this podcast. But yeah, is it actually like your work good or is it because you're a woman? And I think mm-hmm. I've seen that a lot within like different scenes of people. It's like, is her work good or is it just because she's a woman? And it's mm-hmm. like I don't know, it's an interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah
I wonder with the filmmaker sort of like not wanting to be labeled like, or this movie to be labeled feminist or non-feminist or whatever, it's like there is that expectation of feminist work, or like for the characters to be good and only good and not complicated,
mm-hmm.
only, like messy. So I can kind of see like why she would not necessarily want to be part of like the feminist art. I don't know what I'm saying. But like, yeah, it's kind of like with feminist art or feminist representation, there it's kind of a trap because like a lot of the times like the characters aren't allowed to be like bad, quote unquote bad, or messy or like complicated in any kind of way.
Yeah, when they should be, because that's real, like that's realistic, because like mm-hmm. specifically with the girl, it's like she is like this like very pristine character, like very mm-hmm. like put together, but she eats men and she has to mm-hmm. like be, and she's falling in love with Ashraf and she's like, well, I'm evil, but also like I like this boy a lot, and like he at the end he's just like, I like this girl a lot, but she also killed my uncle and my dad.
Yeah.
So it's like this weird thing of like, because no one's really good or bad. It's just like, it's about like accepting that other person, mm-hmm. I guess. I mean, if you eat someone's dad, I don't know about that, but like,
but he forgave her, I think.
And he did forgive her. That's the thing too. Yeah. It's like this idea of like, if you're only putting across one message, I think with the movies or whatever, even like anything you're putting out, like this idea of goodness or badness and separating the two, it's just like not realistic because there are people who are good and bad. And it's just the way you navigate those situations. So I think this film is really interesting where it just like, it's able to talk about the messiness in between mm-hmm. and like, you know, and be very vulnerable about that and make the characters mm-hmm. very vulnerable too, which is interesting. So, yeah, because a lot of times movies are like, well, this person's a good person, this is the bad person. The drug dealer, like I felt a little bad for him. I was like, what? He was so interesting.
Such a douchey scumbag. Like, great styling. Like, he did it such a great job because like you see him, you're like, this guy's a scumbag. I think it's a tracksuit and his haircut.
I live for every movie that has a drug dealer with a tracksuit. Like, that is in the face tattoos, like the big ring, the really like obnoxious haircut. I was like, I love this fit for him. Like, he's living a his best life. But he did so die. Gross. I'm like, he kind of deserves to die. Like,
he also treated the sex worker terribly.
Terribly.
Auntie.
Yeah. No, that's why he deserved to die. And she saw that. Mm-hmm. And that was foreshadowing.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I do like the complicated characters and how, like you said, like nobody's good or bad, but it is, everyone's just kind of surviving in this sort of like horrible ghost town. Like, we have Arash, who is dealing like with his dad who's suffering from addiction, but then also like he steals his rich girl's earrings and also takes Saeed, I think is his name, the drug dealer's drugs after, and then ends up selling them. So he's like breaking the law or whatever, like that even matters, but he's also just like trying to survive and like take care of himself. And then we have the girl who's obviously like killing people and kills like an unhoused person, and like, so she's not only killing like men who are treating women badly. She's just, everyone has their own moral code, I guess.
Yeah, because she's just surviving and she's just trying to like live her life as a vampire. And she's like, if I gotta eat something, even if it's like this person's very vulnerable and like doesn't deserve to die, but it's like, I'm gonna do what's best for me. Mm-hmm. Which is, it's weird because like it makes you uncomfortable, but they're like, no, this is what someone would, you know, this is like, it almost reflects, it's a reflection of like real life, or like people do what they have to do to make ends meet and do what they have to do to like support their family, themselves, or whatever. So it's like almost a weird reflection of like how people are in the real world, where people just have to do stuff to make life work for them. Yeah,
totally.
خوبی جواب بده. پسر خوبی یا نه؟
بله.
دروغ نگو. تو پسر خوب هستی؟
بله.
یه دفعه دیگه ازت میپرسم، راستشو بگو، تو پسر خوب هستی؟
I want to talk a little bit about the girl as like this vampire vigilante. So it just started like you kind of mentioned earlier, like it made me think of like women's safety, and especially with like recent reports of Sarah Everard and Jana Williams murders, and like with those horrible stories, like the not all men hashtag is trending, which is like,
it's just
horrific.
It's terrible. It's like complete bullshit. Like, yeah. It's just like, we know these women are vulnerable, and like on top of that, Indigenous women are always vulnerable, mm-hmm. because just people are racist and mm-hmm. misogynistic at the same time. And like, what does that mean? And how are community members protecting like women right now? And like, mm-hmm. this is something that people have been talking about for forever, right? Like, you don't go, like, you need someone to walk into your car, text me when mm-hmm. you get home, all these different things that people have been yeah. doing. And just like, this shouldn't be happening anymore. People shouldn't go missing. People shouldn't, you know, end up unfortunately like dead. And like, mm-hmm. just specifically women, it's like this constant fear. And like, it's really unfortunate, especially in Winnipeg. Like, you know, it's not uncommon. It does happen here, mm-hmm. but I think it makes people wary every time it does happen, and especially like large numbers, like that, like two, like, you know, I think there's three bodies found this week or something.
Oh,
I saw.
Gosh.
So just like, that's like that's a high number. Like, you know, yeah. like it's just not. Yeah, it's just interesting where the hashtag not all men is just like, no, man, it's all. I think it is. Like, I think it's not. It's all men in the sense where it's like, what are all men doing to like make sure other men are accountable to their actions and how terrible you treat women, or mm-hmm. the things you say, or like, you know, like the type of behavior perpetuating? It's like, it's the same stuff where it's like all lives matter. It's like, why? Like,
yes,
there are shitty men and there are shitty white people, and they happen to be both shitty men. what a coincidence, you know? Mm-hmm. And you know, it's just like, it's just interesting where why they like. When stuff like this happens, there's like this immediate like response to have to protect men. And it's like, you don't have mm-hmm. to protect men, because the people that you need to be protecting are dying. So like, mm-hmm. do that instead. Yeah. And like, it's just
such a gross way of like recentering the conversation about themselves.
Yeah, it's not about you.
So that sort of like led me to think of this quote from House of Psychotic Women by Kayla Janis, and she sort of discusses. She's talking about rape revenge films and female vigilante films. And she discusses how women's worlds are made smaller because of the threat of sexual violence and sort of this like sense of restricted space. So I have a quote here. Our experiences, as well as our parents' experiences, inform how we use public space. As girls, we are taught from an early age to fear the possibility of attack, while male children are routinely let out on a longer leash, instilling them with the opposite. They have the right to more space. Women are limited by open spaces, enclosed spaces, times of day, and even the public's reticence to intervene in a potential attack. It's just a lot this week.
Yeah,
it seems like it's such a weird week to watch this movie, I think.
Oh, definitely, because just like, it just reminds you, as like for women and non-binary folks, and like specifically like for like Black Indigenous women, it's like you're not safe, like mm-hmm. ever, like, and mm-hmm. that's like a really weird fear. It's just like you're. yeah, like when you walk, when you're even just walking to your car at night, like no matter what area you're in, like doesn't matter, like people make this weird assumptions around like downtown or like the North End or whatever. It's like, if it's dark, I'm scared. Like I don't care where I am. I could be in the suburb somewhere. I could be somewhere like outside 25, like far from my house. It's like you're still gonna be scared because you don't know what people's intentions are, and you don't know what, you know, what motivates people to do certain things to women specifically. And it's, it's just super unfortunate. But you know, I like to imagine that I'm like, what if one day I was a vampire? I can just bite this man if he tries to attack me.
Yeah.
That would be great. I think all women should have the ability to like bite men and like, you know, have super like, not bite men, that's what sounds really weird. Have super strength to get out of situations. Like that would be a great alternative world. But I think this, it just makes, I hope this, when people, I hope if anyone hasn't actually watched this film yet and they're watching this film because they're listening to this, it's just like, it's just, it's almost like comforting in a weird way. It's like, yeah, that would be nice, you know?
Totally.
Like, gross men around, you just attack them.
Yeah, it's very like, yeah, it's very cathartic to see this like very strong, like lethal girl taking up these restricted spaces and like walking around and skateboarding around at night.
Yeah, oh, I love that film when she's like, when she took the skateboard from the little boy and just like skates, and I'm like, oh,
I know.
Oh, great.
And she like threatens him because she hates men.
Yeah, she's like, but I won't kill a little boy though.
No,
but
I'll just scare him so that he's good. Yeah. Yeah, you already brought up loneliness, but it is cool to think of like, or not cool, but like interesting to think of like the girl as more lonely than, she's kind of like predatory, but also like vulnerable and lonely at the same time. And she kind of like gravitates towards other characters that she thinks are lonely. So I think with Ati and Arash.
Yeah, I think like there's that one scene with Arash and her and like, oh yeah, it's after, oh, I love it. I remember, I think I rewatched it after. I was like, oh, so good. But it was when he was high on, I think it was X or something. I can't remember which yet, X. And then he was like, she took him back to her place. And then that, when the music starts playing and like the disco ball's going, and then she just like they get closer and closer and closer. And then she like just slides on his chest and puts, like, she's like, I thought she's gonna bite him. I was like, no, don't bite him. No. He likes you.
She like listens to his heartbeat to pop music. It's so romantic.
It's so good. And I was like, that should be just like, that scene should be constantly playing when I need to like feel something.
Oh yeah, it's so great.
And it just like shows like in that moment, it's like she wasn't lonely in that, like, maybe she felt like, I think, it made me feel like, okay, maybe she'll not be lonely anymore because she has him in that moment. And like, she gravitates to him and like, in such a weird way too, because he's super high, super out of it. Doesn't even realize that this girl is just like lurking around by herself. Like, what do you do? Do you want to hang out? And he's just completely oblivious to it.
Yeah.
I think it's really innocent and kind of cute.
Yeah.
He's like, and even before they went to their house, like, he's like, let's sit down. She's like, no, like, I'm just on the ground. Like, go back to my house. Like, what are you doing? Ati too is interesting. Because just like this woman that doesn't have a lot of lines but is like a basically a main character and is just kind of like treated terribly by people and like is super lonely. Like I think straight away you can tell this person is lonely and she gravitates to her and like has like this type of relationship, but like it's very interesting because she's giving the jewelry back to her because from that what's his name? Saeed, right? You said?
Yeah. Oh yeah, when she like puts her hands out and it's just like all this stolen jewelry, like, yeah, please take this. But yeah, and just back to the use of music in the film too, and like that pop music scene is just like so sweet and so romantic.
It's such like a good soundtrack. Like the minute like the first couple of songs came out, I was like, oh my gosh, I need to listen to the sound. Like I think I was watching an interview too where she mentioned like the music was very intentional with everything, and like it's like all the music in the movie set the scene very well. So like that's one thing I was like, amazing. Like back to this black and white, all the different scenes were so good, and also like, the soundtrack sounds like amazing, and just like the pop music aspect too, just so interesting, which I wouldn't have expected at all. Which is weird to like say that even. It's like, why didn't I expect pop music to play? But it's, like, if it's like this, like people like in their, I'm assuming like they're in their 20s, like 18, 19, 20 years old, of course it'd be pop music. Like that's what you listen to when you're like 18, 19. Like a lot of like
Totally
pop music.
And also I could be wrong, but I think the girl is like the only character that's listening to English speaking music.
Oh, that's
so I that kind of like made me think that like maybe she has traveled outside of Bad City, or she just like has different kind of access because she's like older. She's a vampire. Yeah, 127 or something. Like
yeah.
So that just kind of added just like more depth to her character. And apparently, the filmmaker made backstories for every character before she wrote the script, including clothes, their kind of style, and what music they would listen to.
Oh.
So we have Saeed, your favorite guy. So his outfit, his like hateful haircut, his tracksuit, and also his like crunchy electronic music that he's listening to. And then Arash is more of like a rock and roll sort of like James Dean guy. He looks kind of like a greaser. And then the girl is listening to more like new wave kind of pop music, and I just thought that was really, really interesting.
That's super interesting. I think not a lot of people do that, but I think it makes it more meaningful, the characters, because there's not that. Also this movie too, which I know there isn't a lot of characters. Like usually movies that have like constant people coming in and out, but it's just like it's like the same couple people you see, and then like it really sets a tone. It just sets a tone for like the fact that she gave them like a backstory. It's like, oh, interesting. That's really nice.
Yeah, one character I did find kind of interesting, I want to know like what you think of it, is Rockabilly, who is kind of this like omnipresent character but doesn't have any lines. And she's kind of like the kind of wearing like a cowboy shirt and a handkerchief and has the drawn on eyebrows, and it's not entirely stated like whether like she's a drag queen or she's a trans character, but she's like definitely coded as like this queer character. So she's kind of this like omnipresent character, or like a great chorus, or even like a narrator, or like she could just be this like dreamlike set dressing. So I'm not really sure, like what did you think of that character?
Yeah, she popped up like a couple times, so it's interesting. Like, I wish she was able to talk, but at the same time too, like I feel like her facial expressions like sit a lot at the same time, like her outfit and just her like kind of this person, you're like, what are they here for? But I think it kind of makes this film even more interesting, in the sense where like this queer character, essentially you don't really know what they're like, you don't know what their place is amongst the other characters too, and like what they're really there to do, but at the same time you kind of do, because like her, the way like the camera sits on her face, or just like the way like that one scene where like there's like a balloon and she's like kind of playing with it or whatever.
She's dancing.
So I was like, that was it's like random but also like intentional, but I'm still trying to figure out like what was the intention of putting that character in there, just to add like this unspoken person, like this queer person that's around, but like I don't know. I like your presence in it, but I'm like, why were you there?
I think there are a lot of like characters sort of sets and choices that are basically just to set a mood.
Yeah.
Because it's a very moody aesthetic film.
Right.
Too. So, oh, and also like the pit of dead people.
Yeah.
The beginning of the film, they kind of see it a few times throughout. That's such an interesting element too, because you could just, I kind of see it as just to set the mood of this like dusty, forgotten town.
Yeah. Because like, I also imagine like too, like all of her victims would just get dumped in there, like they just like there's no proper burial of anyone, they just get dumped in like this ditch of like other dead people. Like that's like the first thing, one of the first things you see, where like the title of the film comes up and like the backdrop is like all like those dead people in there, you're like, oh, I wonder what this means. It's basically like a ditch of dead people. Like it's like
but is it actually real, or is it only for us, the viewer?
Exactly. I was thinking like, do they see it, does she see that?
Interesting. I like it. I like this movie a lot. So yeah, so that's our show this week. Thank you so much, Mahalit, for coming back.
No, thank you. I always love talking.
I'm glad you like this movie and I'm glad you picked it.
No problem.
Where can people find your work?
People can find me on Instagram, which is mahlet.c. I don't have a website because I'm not a real human who has work online, but you can check me on Instagram. I post my thingies there and I'm doing stuff. I mentioned before, the shorts program. Watch it. If you haven't seen it yet, it's really funny. I think so. the last day to watch it, and it's free, so why not? And then, Big Frida's coming up eventually, like in a week or two, so that'll be super great. Check out all the Gorge Festival stuff Asinim is doing right now. It's so much good programming. Like, there's not only is Big Frida, there's also like voguing classes, there's craft stuff, there's like drag brunch, I think they're still kind of trying to do from home and stuff. A lot of like really fun virtual stuff. So
That's so great. All right, cool, thank you.
Bye.
You're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM, Winnipeg.
Flight of the nightingales from a dream of sleep, her body.